shrugged, uncomfortable in his skin. "What kind of work did she do?" he asked. "Light freighter. I don't know of any particular cargo. I had the impression that she shipped wherever there was a need." "Not a regular route, then?" "That was my impression." "Whose ships did she work? One particular freighter, or whatever came to hand? A particular company?" "I'll find what I can for you," the man said. "Courier for the OPA?" "I'll find out," the man said, "what I can." The news that afternoon was all about Phoebe. The science station there, the one that Belters weren't allowed even to dock at, had been hit. The official report stated that half the inhabitants of the base were dead, the other half missing. No one had claimed responsibility yet, but the common wisdom was that some Belter group, maybe the OPA, maybe someone else, had finally managed an act of vandalism with a body count. Miller sat in his hole, watching the broadcast feed and drinking. It was all going to hell. The pirate casts from the OPA calling for war. The burgeoning guerrilla actions. All of it. The time was coming that Mars wasn't going to ignore them anymore. And when Mars took action, it wouldn't matter if Earth followed suit. It would be the first real war in the Belt. The catastrophe was coming, and neither side seemed to understand how vulnerable they were. And there was nothing, not one single goddamn thing that he could do to stop it. He couldn't even slow it down. Julie Mao grinned at him from the still frame, her pinnace behind her. "Attacked," the man had said. There was nothing about it in her record. Might have been a mugging. Might have been something worse. Miller had known a lot of victims, and he put them into three categories. First, there were the ones who pretended nothing had happened, or that whatever it was didn't really matter. That was well over half the people he talked to. Then there were the professionals, people who took their victimization as permission to act out any way they saw fit. That ate most of the rest. Maybe 5%, maybe less, were the ones who sucked it up, learned the lesson, and moved on. The Julies. The good ones. His door chimed 3 hours after his official shift was over. Miller stood up, less steady on his feet than he'd expected. He counted the bottles on the table. There were more than he'd thought. He hesitated for a moment, torn between answering the door and throwing the bottles into the recycler. The door chimed again. He went to open it. If it was someone from the station, they expected him to be drunk anyway. No reason to disappoint. The face was familiar. Acne-pocked, controlled. The OPA armband from the bar. The one who'd had Mateo Judd killed. The cop.
"Evening," Miller said.
"Detective Miller," the pocked man said. "I think we've gotten off on the wrong foot. I was hoping we could try again."
"Right.
May I come in?"
"I try not to take strange men home," Miller said. "I don't even know your name."
"Anderson Dawes," the pocked man said. "I'm the series liaison for the Outer Planets Alliance. I think we can help each other. May I come in?"
Miller stood back, and the pocked man, Dawes, stepped inside. Dawes took in the hole for the space of 2 slow breaths, then sat as if the bottles and the stink of old beer were nothing to comment on. Silently cursing himself and willing a sobriety he didn't feel, Miller sat across from him.
"I need a favor from you," Dawes said. "I'm willing to pay for it. Not money, of course. Information."
"What do you want?" Miller asked.
"Stop looking for Juliet Mao."
"No sale."
"I'm trying to keep the peace, Detective," Dawes said. "You should hear me out."
Miller leaned forward, elbows on the table. Mr. Serene, jiu-jitsu instructor, was working for the OPA? The timing of Dawes' visit seemed to be saying so. Miller filed that possibility away, but said nothing.
"Mao worked for us,"
Dawes said. But you'd guess that. More or less.
You know where she is?
We don't. We are looking for her. And we need to be the ones to find her. Not you.
Miller shook his head. There was a response, the right thing to say. It was rattling in the back of his head, and if he just didn't feel quite so fuzzy.
You're one of them, detective. You may have lived your whole life out here, but your salary is paid by an interplanet corporation. No, wait, I don't blame you. I understand how it is. They were hiring, and you needed the work. But we're walking on a bubble right now. The Canterbury, the fringe elements in the belt calling for war.
Phoebe Station.
Yes, they'll blame us for that, too. Add a Luna Corporation's prodigal daughter.
You think something's happened to her?
She was on the scapulae, Dawes said. And when Miller didn't immediately respond, he added, the freighter that Mars used as bait when they killed the Canterbury.
Miller thought about that for a long moment, then whistled low.
We don't know what happened, Dawes said. Until we do, I can't have you stirring up the water. It's muddy enough now.
And what information are you offering? Miller asked. That's the trade, right?
I'll tell you what we find. After we find her, Dawes said.
Miller chuckled, and the OPA man went on.
It's a generous offer, considering who you are. Employee of Earth, partner of an Earther. Some people will think that was enough to make you the enemy, too.
But not you, Miller said.
I think we've got the same basic goals, you and I. Stability. Safety. Strange times make for strange alliances.
Two questions. Dawes spread his arms, welcoming them.
Who took the riot gear? Miller asked.
Riot gear?
Before the Canterbury died, someone took our riot gear. Maybe they wanted to arm soldiers for crowd control, maybe they didn't want our crowds controlled. Who took it? Why?
It wasn't us, Dawes said.
That's not an answer. Try this one. What happened to the Golden Bough Society?
Dawes looked blank.
Loka Grega? Miller asked. Sohiro?
Dawes opened his mouth, closed it. Miller dropped his beer bottle into the recycler.
Nothing personal, friend, he said. But your investigative techniques aren't impressing me. What makes you think you can find her?
It's not a fair test, Dawes said. Give me a few days. I'll get answers for you.
Talk to me then. I'll try not to start an all-out war while you do, but I'm not letting go of Julie. You can go now.
Dawes rose. He looked sour.
You're making a mistake, he said.
Won't be my first.
After the man left, Miller sat at his table. He'd been stupid. Worse, he'd been self-indulgent. Drinking himself into a stupor instead of doing the work, instead of finding Julie. But he knew more now. The scapulae. The Canterbury. More lines between the dots. He cleaned away his bottles, took a shower, and pulled up his terminal, searching what there was about Julie's ship. After an hour, a new thought occurred to him, a small fear that grew the more he looked at it. Near midnight, he put a call through to Havelock's Hole. His partner took 2 full minutes to answer. When he did, his image was wild-haired and bleary-eyed.
Miller?
Havelock. You have any vacation time saved up?
A little.
Sick leave?
Sure, Havelock said.
Take it, Miller said.
Take it now. Get off station. Someplace safe if you can find it. Someplace they're not going to start killing Earthers for shits and giggles if things go pear-shaped.
I don't understand. What are you talking about?
I had a little visit with an OPA agent tonight. He was trying to talk me into dropping my kidnap job. I think he's nervous. I think he's scared.
Havelock was silent for a moment,
while the words filtered into his sleep-drunk mind.
Jesus, he said. What scares the OPA?
Chapter 13. Holden. Holden froze, watching the blood pump from Shed's neck, then whip away like smoke into an exhaust fan. The sounds of combat began to fade as the air was sucked out of the room. His ears throbbed and then hurt like someone had put ice picks in them. As he fought with his couch restraints, he glanced over at Alex. The pilot was yelling something, but it didn't carry through the thin air. Naomi and Amos had gotten out of their couches already, kicked off, and were flying across the room to the two holes. Amos had a plastic dinner tray in one hand, Naomi a white three-ring binder. Holden stared at them for the half-second it took to understand what they were doing. The world narrowed, his peripheral vision all stars and darkness. By the time he'd gotten free, Amos and Naomi had already covered the holes with their makeshift patches. The room was filled with a high-pitched whistle as the air tried to force its way out through the imperfect seals. Holden's sight began to return as the air pressure started to rise. He was panting hard, gasping for breath. Someone slowly turned the room's volume knob back up, and Naomi's yells for help became audible. Jim, open the emergency locker, she screamed. She was pointing at a small red and yellow panel in the bulkhead near his crash couch. Years of shipboard training made a path through the anoxia and depressurization, and he yanked the tab on the locker's seal and pulled the door open. Inside were a white first aid kit marked with the ancient Red Cross symbol, half a dozen oxygen masks, and a sealed bag of hardened plastic discs attached to a glue gun. The emergency seal kit. He snatched it. Just the gun, Naomi yelled at him. He wasn't sure if her voice sounded distant because of the thin air or because the pressure drop had blown his eardrums. Holden yanked the gun free from the bag of patches and threw it at her. She ran a bead of instant sealing glue around the edge of her three-ring binder. She tossed the gun to Amos, who caught it with an effortless backhand motion and put a seal around his dinner tray. The whistling stopped, replaced by the hiss of the atmosphere system as it labored to bring the pressure back up to normal. 15 seconds. Everyone looked at Shed. Without the vacuum, his blood was pouring out into a floating red sphere just above his neck, like a hideous cartoon replacement for his head. Jesus Christ, boss, Amos said, looking away from Shed to Naomi. He snapped his teeth closed with an audible click and shook his head. What? Gauss round, Alex said. Those ships have railguns.
Belt ships with railguns? Amos said. Did they get a fucking navy and no one told me?
Jim, the hallway outside and the cabin on the other side are both in vacuum, Naomi said. The ship's compromised. Holden started to respond, then caught a good look at the binder Naomi had glued over the breech. The white cover was stamped with black letters that read, MCRN Emergency Procedures. He had to suppress a laugh that would almost certainly go manic on him. Jim, Naomi said, her voice worried.
I'm okay, Naomi, Holden replied, then took a deep breath. How long do those patches hold?
Naomi shrugged with her hands, then started pulling her hair behind her head and tying it up with a red elastic band. Longer than the air will last. If everything around us is in vacuum, that means the cabin's running on emergency bottles. No recycling. I don't know how much each room has, but it won't be more than a couple hours.
Kinda makes you wish we'd worn our fucking suits, don't it? Amos asked.
Wouldn't have mattered, Alex said. We'd come over here in our enviro suits, they'd just have taken them away.
Could have tried, Amos said.
Well, if you'd like to go back in time and do it over, be my guest, partner.
Naomi sharply said, Hey, but then nothing more. No one was talking about Shed. They were working hard not to look at the body. Holden cleared his throat to get everyone's attention, then floated to Shed's couch, drawing their eyes with him. He paused a moment, letting everyone get a good look at the decapitated body, then pulled a blanket from the storage drawer beneath the couch and strapped it down over Shed's body with the couch's restraints. Shed's been killed. We're in deep peril. Arguing won't extend our lives 1 second, Holden said, looking at each member of his crew in turn. What will? No one spoke. Holden turned to Naomi first. Naomi, what will keep us alive longer that we can do right now? He asked. I'll see if I can find the emergency air. The room's built for six, and there are four of us. I might be able to turn the flow down and stretch it longer. Good, thank you. Alex? If there's anyone other than us, they'll be looking for survivors. I'll start pounding on the bulkhead. They won't hear it in the vacuum, but if there's cabins with air, the sound will travel down the metal. Good plan. I refuse to believe we're the only ones left on this ship, Holden said, then turned to Amos. Amos? Let me check on that comm panel. Might be able to get the bridge or damage control or shit something, Amos replied. Thanks. I'd love to let someone know we're still here, Holden said. People moved off to work while Holden floated in the air next to Shed. Naomi began yanking access panels off the bulkheads. Alex, hands pressed against a couch for leverage, lay on the deck and began to kick the bulkhead with his boots. The room vibrated slightly with each booming kick. Amos pulled a multi-tool out of his pocket and began taking the comm panel apart. When Holden was sure everyone was busy, he put one hand on Shed's shoulder, just below the blanket's spreading red stain. I'm sorry, he whispered to the body. His eyes burned, and he pressed them into the back of his thumbs. The comm unit was hanging out of the bulkhead on wires when it buzzed once, loudly. Amos yelped and pushed off hard enough to fly across the room. Holden caught him, wrenching his shoulder by trying to arrest the momentum of 120 kilos of Earther mechanic. The comm buzzed again. Holden let Amos go and floated to it. A yellow LED glowed next to the unit's white button. Holden pressed the button. The comm crackled to life with Lieutenant Kelly's voice. Move away from the hatch, we're coming in, he said. Grab something, Holden yelled to the crew, then grabbed a couch restraint and wrapped it around his hand and forearm. When the hatch opened, Holden expected all the air to rush out. Instead, there was a loud crack, and the pressure dropped slightly for a second. Outside in the corridor, thick sheets of plastic had been sealed to the walls, creating an ad hoc airlock. The walls of the new chamber bowed out dangerously with the air pressure, but they held. Inside the newly created lock, Lieutenant Kelly and three of his Marines wore heavy vacuum-rated armor and carried enough weaponry to fight several minor wars. The Marines moved quickly into the room, weapons ready, and then sealed the hatch behind them. One of them tossed a large bag at Holden. 5 vac suits, get them on, Kelly said. His eyes moved to the bloody blanket covering Shed, then to the 2 improvised patches. Casualty? Our medic, Shed Garvey, Holden replied. Yeah, what the fuck? Amos said loudly. Who's out there shooting the shit out of your fancy boat? Naomi and Alex said nothing, but started pulling the suits from the bag and handing them out. I don't know, Kelly said, but we're leaving right now. I've been ordered to get you off this ship in an escape craft. We've got less than 10 minutes to make it to the hangar bay, take possession of a ship, and get out of this combat area. Dress fast. Holden put on his suit, the implications of their evacuation racing through his mind. Lieutenant, is the ship coming apart? He asked. Not yet, but we're being boarded. Then why are we leaving? We're losing. Kelly didn't tap his foot while waiting for them to seal into their suits. Holden guessed this was only because the Marines had their magnetic boots turned on. As soon as everyone had given the thumbs up, Kelly did a quick radio check on each suit, then headed back into the corridor. With 8 people in it, 4 of them in powered armor, the mini airlock was tight. Kelly pulled a heavy knife from a sheath on his chest and slashed the plastic barrier open in 1 quick movement. The hatch behind them slammed shut, and the air in the corridor vanished in a soundless ripple of plastic flaps. Kelly charged into the corridor with the crew scrambling to keep up.
"We are moving with all speed to the keel elevator banks," Kelly said through the radio link. "They're locked down because of the boarding alarm, but I can get the doors open on one and we'll float down the shaft to the hangar bay. Everything is on the double. If you see boarders, do not stop. Keep moving at all times. We'll handle the hostiles. Roger that?"
"Roger, Lieutenant," Holden gasped out.
"Why board you?"
"The Command Information Center," Alex said. "It's the Holy Grail. Codes, deployments, computer cores, the works. Taking a flagship CIC is a strategist's wet dream."
"Cut the chatter," Kelly said.
Holden ignored him.
"That means they'll blow the core rather than let that happen, right?"
"Yep,"
Alex replied.
"Standard ops for boarders. Marines hold the bridge, CIC, and engineering. If any of the three is breached, the other two flip the switch. The ship turns into a star for a few seconds."
"Standard ops," Kelly growled. "Those are my friends."
"Sorry, LT," Alex replied. "I served on the Bandon. Don't mean to make light."
They turned a corner and the elevator bank came into view. All eight elevators were closed and sealed. The heavy pressure doors had slammed shut when the ship was holed.
"Gomez, run the bypass," Kelly said. "Mole, Dookie, watch those corridors."
Two of the Marines spread out, watching the hallways through their gun sights. The third moved to one of the elevator doors and started doing something complicated to the controls. Holden motioned his crew to the wall, out of the firing lines. The deck vibrated slightly from time to time beneath his feet. The enemy ships wouldn't still be firing, not with their boarders inside. It must be small arms fire and light explosives. But as they stood there in the perfect quiet of vacuum, everything that was happening took on a distant and surreal feeling. Holden recognized that his mind wasn't working the way it should be. Trauma reaction. The destruction of the Canterbury, the deaths of Ade and McDowell, and now someone had killed Shed in his bunk. It was too much. He couldn't process it. He felt the scene around him grow more and more distant. Holden looked behind him at Naomi, Alex, and Amos, his crew. They stared back, faces ashen and ghostly in the green light of their suit displays. Gomez pumped his fist in triumph as the outer pressure door slid open, revealing the elevator doors. Kelly gestured to his men. The one called Mole turned around and started to walk to the elevator, when his face disintegrated in a spray of pebble-shaped bits of armored glass and blood. His armored torso and the corridor bulkhead beside him bloomed in 100 small detonations and puffs of smoke. His body jerked and swayed, attached to the floor by magnetic boots. Holden's sense of unreality washed away in adrenaline. The fire spraying across the wall and Mole's body was high explosive rounds from a rapid-fire weapon. The comm channel filled with yelling from the Marines and Holden's own crew. To Holden's left, Gomez yanked the elevator doors open using the augmented strength of his powered armor, exposing the empty shaft behind them.
"Inside!" Kelly shouted. "Everybody inside!"
Holden held back, pushing Naomi in and then Alex. The last Marine, the one Kelly had called Dookie, fired his rifle on full auto at some target around the corner from Holden. When the weapon ran dry, the Marine dropped to one knee and ejected the clip in the same motion. Almost faster than Holden could follow, he pulled a new magazine from his harness and slapped it into his weapon. He was firing again less than 2 seconds after he'd run out. Naomi yelled at Holden to get into the elevator shaft, and then a vice-like hand grabbed his shoulder, yanked him off his magnetic grip on the floor, and hurled him through the open elevator doors.
"Get killed when I'm not babysitting," Lieutenant Kelly barked.
They shoved off the walls of the elevator shaft and flew down the long tunnel toward the aft of the ship. Holden kept looking back at the open door, receding into the distance behind them.
"Dookie isn't following us," he said.
He's covering our exit, Kelly replied.
So we better get away, Gomez added. Make it mean something.
Kelly, at the head of the group, grabbed at a rung on the wall of the shaft and came to a jerking stop. Everyone else followed suit.
Here's our exit. Gomez, go check it out, Kelly said. Holden, here's the plan. We'll be taking one of the Corvettes from the hangar bay.
That made sense to Holden. The Corvette class was a light frigate. A fleet escort vessel, it was the smallest naval ship equipped with an Epstein drive. It would be fast enough to travel anywhere in the system and outrun most threats. Its secondary role was as a torpedo bomber, so it would also have teeth. Holden nodded inside his helmet at Kelly, then gestured for him to continue. Kelly waited until Gomez had finished opening the elevator doors and gone into the hangar bay.
Okay, I've got the key card and activation code to get us inside and the ship fired up. I'll be heading straight for it, so all of you stick right on my ass. Make sure your boot mags are off. We're going to push off the wall and fly to it, so aim straight or you miss your ride. Everyone with me?
Affirmative replies all around.
Outstanding. Gomez, what's it look like out there?
Trouble, LT. Half a dozen boarders looking over the ships in the hangar. Powered armor, zero-G maneuvering packs and heavy weapons. Loaded for bear, Gomez whispered back. People always whispered when they were hiding.
Wrapped in a spacesuit and surrounded by vacuum, Gomez could have been lighting fireworks inside his armor and no one would have heard it. But he whispered.
We run for the ship and shoot our way through, Kelly said. Gomez, I'm bringing the civvies in 10 seconds. You're covering fire. Shoot and displace. Try and make them think you're a small platoon.
You calling me small, sir? Gomez said.
6 dead assholes coming up.
Holden, Amos, Alex, and Naomi followed Kelly out of the elevator shaft and into the hangar bay and stopped behind a stack of military green crates. Holden peeked over them, spotting the boarders immediately. They were in 2 groups of 3 near the night, one group walking on top of it and the other on the deck below it. Their armor was flat black. Holden hadn't seen the design before. Kelly pointed at them and looked at Holden. Holden nodded back. Kelly pointed across the hangar at a squat black frigate about 25 meters away, halfway between them and the night. He held up his left hand and began counting down from 5 on his fingers. At 2, the room strobed like a disco. Gomez opening fire from a position 10 meters from their own. The first barrage hit 2 of the boarders on top of the knight and hurled them spinning off. A heartbeat later, a second burst was fired 5 meters from where Holden had seen the first. He would have sworn it was 2 different men. Kelly folded up the last finger on his hand, planted his feet on the wall, and pushed off toward their Corvette. Holden waited for Alex, Amos, and Naomi, then shoved off last. By the time he was in motion, Gomez was firing from a new location. One of the boarders on the deck pointed a large weapon toward the muzzle flash from Gomez's gun. Gomez, and the crate he'd been taking cover behind, disappeared in fire and shrapnel. They were halfway to the ship, and Holden was starting to think they might make it, when a line of smoke crossed the room and intersected with Kelly. And the lieutenant disappeared in a flash of light.
Chapter 14. Miller. The Xinglong died stupid. Afterward, everyone knew she was one of thousands of small-time rock-hopping prospector ships. The belt was lousy with them. 5 or 6 family operations that had scraped together enough for a down payment and set up operations. When it happened, they'd been 3 payments behind, and their bank, Consolidated Holdings and Investments, had put a lien on the ship, which, common wisdom had it, was why they had disabled her transponder. Just honest folks with a rust bucket to call their own, trying to keep flying. If you were going to make a poster of the Belter's dream, it would have been the Xinglong. The Scipio Africanus, a patrol destroyer, was due to head back down toward Mars at the end of its 2-year tour of the Belt.
They both headed for a captured cometary body a few 100,000 kilometers from Chiron to top off their water. When the prospecting ship first came in range, the Scipio saw a fast-moving ship running dark and headed more or less in their direction. The official Martian press releases all said that the Scipio had tried repeatedly to hail her. The OPA pirate casts all said it was crap, and that no listening station in the belt had heard anything like that. Everyone agreed that the Scipio had opened its point defense cannons and turned the prospecting ship into glowing slag. The reaction had been as predictable as elementary physics. The Martians were diverting another couple dozen ships to help maintain order. The OPA's shriller talking heads called for open war, and fewer of the independent sites and castes were disagreeing with them. The great, implacable clockwork of war ticked one step closer to open fighting. And someone on Ceres had put a Martian-born citizen named Enrique Dos Santos through 8 or 9 hours of torture and nailed the remains to a wall near Sector 11's water reclamation works. They identified him by the terminal that had been left on the floor along with the man's wedding ring, and a thin, faux-leather wallet with his credit access data and 30,000 Europa script new yen. The dead Martian had been affixed to the wall with a single-charge prospector's spike. 5 hours afterward, the air recyclers were still laboring to get the acid smell out. The forensics team had taken their samples. They were about ready to cut the poor bastard down. It always surprised Miller how peaceful dead people looked. However god-awful the circumstances, the slack calm that came at the end looked like sleep. It made him wonder if when his turn came, he'd actually feel that last relaxation.
"Surveillance cameras?" he said.
"Been out for 3 days," his new partner said. "Kids busted him." Octavia Muss was originally from Crimes Against Persons, back before Star Helix split violence up into smaller specialties. From there, she'd been on the rape squad. Then a couple of months of crimes against children. If the woman still had a soul, it had been pressed thin enough to see through. Her eyes never registered anything more than mild surprise.
"We know which kids?"
"Some punks from upstairs," she said. "Booked, fined, released into the wild."
"We should round them back up," Miller said. "It'd be interesting to know whether someone paid them to take out these particular cameras."
"I'd bet against it."
"Then whoever did this had to know that these cameras were busted."
"Someone in maintenance?
Or a cop?"
Muss smacked her lips and shrugged. She'd come from 3 generations in the belt. She had family on ships like the one the Scipio had killed. The skin and bone and gristle hanging in front of them were no surprise to her. You dropped a hammer under thrust, and it fell to the deck. Your government slaughtered 6 families of ethnic Chinese prospectors. Someone pinned you to the living rock of Ceres with a 3-foot titanium alloy spike. Same, same.
"There's going to be consequences," Miller said, meaning, "This isn't a corpse, it's a billboard. It's a call to war."
"There ain't," Muss said. "The war is here anyway, banner or no," she thought.
"Yeah," Miller said, "you're right. There ain't."
"You want to do next of kin? I'll go take a look at outlying video." They didn't burn his fingers off here in the corridor, so they had to haul him in from somewhere.
"Yeah," Miller said.
"I've got a sympathy form letter I can fire off. Wife?"
"Dunno," she said. "Haven't looked."
Back at the station house, Miller sat alone at his desk. Muss already had her own desk, 2 cubicles over, and customized the way she liked it. Havelock's desk was empty and cleaned twice over, as if the custodial services had wanted the smell of earth off their good belter chair. Miller pulled up the dead man's file, found the next of kin, Jun Yi Dos Santos, working on Ganymede. Married 6 years. No kids.
Well, there was something to be glad of, at least. If you were going to die, at least you shouldn't leave a mark.
He navigated to the form letter, dropped in the new widow's name and contact address. "Dear Mrs. Dos Santos, I'm very sorry to have to tell you, blah, 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 your," he spun through the menu, "husband was a valued and respected member of the series community, and I assure you that everything possible will be done to see that her," Miller toggled that, "his killer or killers will be brought to answer for this. Yours." It was inhuman. It was impersonal and cold and as empty as vacuum. The hunk of flesh on that corridor wall had been a real man with passions and fears, just like anyone else. Miller wanted to wonder what it said about him that he could ignore the fact so easily. But the truth was, he knew. He sent the message and tried not to dwell on the pain it was about to cause. The board was thick. The incident count was twice what it should have been. "This is what it looks like," he thought. "No riots, no hole-by-hole military action or Marines in the corridors. Just a lot of unsolved homicides." Then he corrected himself. "This is what it looks like so far." It didn't make his next task any easier. Shadid was in her office.
"What can I do for you?" she asked.
"I need to make some requisitions for interrogation transcripts," he said. "But it's a little irregular. I was thinking it might be better if it came through you." Shadid sat back in her chair.
"I'll look at it," she said. "What are we trying to get?"
Miller nodded, as if by signaling yes himself he could get her to say the same. "Jim Holden, the Earther from the Canterbury. Mars should be picking his people up around now, and I need to petition for the debriefing transcripts."
"You have a case that goes back to the Canterbury?"
"Yeah," he said. "Seems like I do."
"Tell me," she said. "Tell me now."
"It's the side job, Julie Mao. I've been looking into it. I saw your report."
"So you know she's associated with the OPA.
From what I've found, it looks like she was on a freighter that was doing courier runs for them."
"You have proof of that?"
"I have an OPA guy that said as much."
"On the record?"
"No," Miller said. "It was informal."
"And it tied into the Martian Navy killing the Canterbury how?"
"She was on the Scupuli," Miller said. "It was used as bait to stop the Canterbury. The thing is, you look at the broadcasts Holden makes, he talks about finding it with a Mars Navy beacon and no crew. And you think there's something in there that'll help you?"
"Won't know until I see it," Miller said.
"But if Julie wasn't on that freighter, then someone had to take her off."
Shadid's smile didn't reach her eyes.
"And you would like to ask the Martian Navy to please hand over whatever they got from Holden?"
"If he saw something on that boat, something that'll give us an idea what happened to Julie and the other—"
"You aren't thinking this through," Shadid said. "The Mars Navy killed the Canterbury. They did it to provoke a reaction from the belt so they'd have an excuse to roll in and take us over. The only reason they're debriefing the survivors is so that no one could get to the poor bastards first. Holden and his crew are either dead or getting their minds cored out by Martian interrogation specialists right now. We can't be sure, and even if I could get a full record of what they said as each toenail got ripped off, it would do you exactly no good, Miller. The Martian Navy isn't going to ask about the Scupuli. They know good and well what happened to the crew. They planted the Scupuli." "Is that Star Helix's official stand?" Miller asked.
The words were barely out of his mouth before he saw they'd been a mistake. Shadid's face closed down like a light going out. Now that he'd said it, he saw the implied threat he'd just made.
"I'm just pointing out the source reliability issue," Shadid said. "You don't go to the suspect and ask where they think you should look next, and the Juliet Mao retrieval isn't your first priority."
"I'm not saying it is," Miller said, chagrined to hear the defensiveness in his voice.
"We have a board out there that's full and getting fuller. Our first priorities are safety and continuity of services. If what you're doing isn't directly related to that, there are better things for you to be doing. This war isn't our job, Shadid said. Our job is Ceres. Get me a final report on Juliet Mao. I'll send it through channels. We've done what we could. I don't think I do, Shadid said. We've done what we could. Now stop being a pussy, get your ass out there and catch bad guys, detective.
Yes, Captain, Miller said.
Mus was sitting at Miller's desk when he got back to it, a cup in her hand that was either strong tea or weak coffee. She nodded toward his desktop monitor. On it, three belters, two men and one woman, were coming out of a warehouse door, an orange plastic shipping container carried between them. Miller raised his eyebrows. Employed by an independent gas hauling company, nitrogen, oxygen, basic atmospherics, nothing exotic. Looks like they had the poor bastard in one of the company warehouses. I've sent forensics over to see if we can get any blood splatters for confirmation.
Good work, Miller said.
Mus shrugged. Adequate work, she seemed to say.
Where are the perps?
Miller asked. Shipped out yesterday, she said. Flight plan logs them as headed for Io.
Io?
Earth-Mars Coalition Central, Mus said. Want to put any money on whether they actually show up there?
Sure,
Miller said. I'll lay you 50 that they don't. Mus actually laughed. I've put them on the alert system, she said. Any place they land, the locals will have a heads up and a tracking number for the Dos Santos thing.
So case closed, Miller said.
Chalk another one up for the good guys, Mus agreed. The rest of the day was hectic. Three assaults, two of them overtly political and one domestic. Mus and Miller cleared all three from the board before the end of shift. There would be more by tomorrow. After he clocked out, Miller stopped at a food cart near one of the tube stations for a bowl of vat rice and textured protein that approximated teriyaki chicken. All around him on the tube, normal citizens of Ceres read their news feeds and listened to music. A young couple half a car up from him leaned close to each other, murmuring and giggling. They might have been 16, 17. He saw the boy's wrist snake up under the girl's shirt. She didn't protest. An old woman directly across from Miller slept, her head lolling against the wall of the car, her snores almost delicate. These people were what it was all about, Miller told himself. Normal people living small lives in a bubble of rock surrounded by hard vacuum. If they let the station turn into a riot zone, let order fail, all these lives would get turned into kibble like a kitten in a meat grinder. Making sure it didn't happen was for people like him, Mus, even Shadid. So, a small voice said in the back of his mind, why isn't it your job to stop Mars from dropping a nuke and cracking Ceres like an egg? What's the bigger threat to that guy standing over there? A few unlicensed whores? Or a belt at war with Mars? What was the harm that could come from knowing what happened to the Scopuli? But of course, he knew the answer to that. He couldn't judge how dangerous the truth was until he knew it, which was itself a fine reason to keep going. The OPA man, Anderson Dawes, was sitting on a cloth folding chair outside Miller's hole reading a book. It was a real book. Onion skin pages bound in what might have been actual leather. Miller had seen pictures of them before. The idea of that much weight for a single megabyte of data struck him as decadent.
Detective.
Mr. Dawes?
I was hoping we could talk.
Miller was glad, as they went inside together, that he'd cleaned up a little. All the beer bottles had gone to the recycler. The tables and cabinets were dusted. The cushions on the chairs had all been mended or replaced. As Dawes took his seat, Miller realized he'd done the housework in anticipation of this meeting. He hadn't realized it until now. Dawes put his book on the table, dug in his jacket pocket and slid a thin, black film drive across the table. Miller picked it up.
"What am I going to see on this?" he asked.
"Nothing you can't confirm in the records," Dawes answered.
"Anything fabricated?"
"Yes," Dawes said. His grin did nothing to improve his appearance. "But not by us. You asked about the police riot gear. It was signed for by a Sergeant Pauline Tricholowski for transfer to Special Services Unit 23.
"Special Services 23?
"Yes," Dawes said. "It doesn't exist. Nor does Tricholowski. The equipment was all boxed up, signed for, and delivered to a dock. The freighter in the berth at the time was registered to a Corporação do Gato Preto.
Black Cat?
You know them?"
"Import-export, same as everyone else," Miller said with a shrug.
"We investigated them as a possible front for the Loca Grega. Never tied them down, though."
"You were right."
"You prove it?"
"Not my job," Dawes said. "But this might interest you. Automated docking logs for the ship when she left here and when she arrived at Ganymede. She's 3 tons lighter, not even counting reaction mass consumption. And the transit time is longer than the orbital mechanics projections."
"Someone met her," Miller said. "Transferred the gear to another ship."
"There's your answer," Dawes said. "Both of them. The riot gear was taken off the station by local organized crime. There aren't records to support it, but I think it's safe to assume that they also shipped out the personnel to use that gear."
"Where to?"
Dawes lifted his hands.
Miller nodded. "They were off station. Case closed. Another one for the good guys."
"Damn." "I've kept my part of the bargain," Dawes said. "You asked for information. I've gotten it. Now, are you going to keep your end?"
"Drop the Mao investigation," Miller said. It wasn't a question, and Dawes didn't act as if it were.
Miller leaned back in his chair. "Juliet Andromeda Mao. Inner system heiress turned OPA courier. Pinnace racer. Brown belt, aiming for black."
"Sure, what the hell," he said. "It's not like I would have shipped her back home if I'd found her."
"No?"
Miller shifted his hands in a gesture that meant, "Of course not."
"She's a good kid," Miller said. "How would you feel if you were all grown up and Mommy could still pull you back home by your ear? It was a bullshit job from the start."
Dawes smiled again. This time it actually did help a little.
"I'm glad to hear you say that, Detective. And I won't forget the rest of our agreement. When we find her, I will tell you. You've got my word on it."
"I appreciate that," Miller said. There was a moment of silence. Miller couldn't decide if it was companionable or awkward. Maybe there was room for both. Dawes rose, put out his hand. Miller shook it. Dawes left. Two cops, working for different sides. Maybe they had something in common. Didn't mean Miller was uncomfortable lying to the man. He opened his terminal's encryption program, routed it to his communication suite, and started talking into the camera.
"We haven't met, sir, but I hope you'll find a few minutes to help me out. I'm Detective Miller with Star Helix Security. I'm on the Ceres security contract, and I've been tasked with finding your daughter. I've got a couple questions."
Chapter 15. Holden. Holden grabbed for Naomi. He struggled to orient himself as the two of them spun across the bay, with nothing to push off of, and nothing to arrest their flight. They were in the middle of the room, with no cover. The blast had hurled Kelly 5 meters through the air and into the side of a packing crate, where he was floating now, one magnetic boot connected to the side of the container, the other struggling to connect with the deck. Amos had been blown down and lay flat on the floor. his lower leg stuck out in an impossible angle. Alex crouched at his side. Holden craned his neck, looking toward the attackers. There was the boarder with the grenade launcher who had blasted Kelly, lining up on them for the killing shot. "We're dead," Holden thought. Naomi made an obscene gesture. The man with the grenade launcher shuddered and dissolved in a spray of blood and small detonations.
"Get to the ship!"
Gomez screamed from the radio. His voice was grating and high, half shrieking pain and half battle ecstasy. Holden pulled the tether line off Naomi's suit.
"What are you?"
she began. "Trust me," he said. Then put his feet into her stomach and shoved off hard. He hit the deck while she spun toward the ceiling. He kicked on his boot mags and then yanked the tether to pull her down to him. The room strobed with sustained machine gun fire. Holden said, "Stay low," and ran as quickly as his magnetic boots would allow toward Alex and Amos. The mechanic moved his limbs feebly, so he was still alive. Holden realized he still had the end of Naomi's tether in his hand, so he clipped it onto a loop on his suit. No more getting separated. Holden lifted Amos off the deck, then checked the inertia. The mechanic grunted and muttered something obscene. Holden attached Amos's tether to his suit, too. He'd carry the whole crew, if that was what it took. Without saying a word, Alex clipped his tether to Holden and gave him a weary thumbs up.
"That was, I mean, fuck," Alex said.
"Yeah," Holden said.
"Jim," Naomi said, "look."
Holden followed her gaze. Kelly was staggering toward them. His armor was visibly crushed on the left side of his torso, and hydraulic fluid leaked from his suit into a trail of droplets floating behind him. But he was moving, toward the frigate.
"Okay," Holden said. "Let's go."
The five of them moved as a group to the ship, the air around them filled with pieces of packing crates blown apart by the ongoing battle. A wasp stung Holden's arm, and his suit's head-up display informed him that it had sealed a minor breach. He felt something warm trickle down his bicep. Gomez shouted like a madman over the radio as he dashed around the outer edge of the bay, firing wildly. The return fire was constant. Holden saw the Marine hit again and again, small explosions and ablative clouds coming off his suit until Holden could hardly believe that there could be anything inside it still living. But Gomez kept the enemy's attention, and Holden and the crew were able to limp up to the half-cover of the corvette's airlock. Kelly pulled a small metal card from a pocket on his armor. A swipe of the card opened the outer door, and Holden pulled Amos's floating body inside. Naomi, Alex, and the wounded Marine came in after, staring at each other in shocked disbelief as the airlock cycled and the inner doors opened.
"I can't believe we—"
Alex said. Then his voice trailed off.
"Talk about it later,"
Kelly barked.
"Alex Kamal, you served on MCRN ships. Can you fly this thing?"
"Sure, LT,"
Alex replied, then visibly straightened.
"Why me?"
"Our other pilot's outside getting killed."
"Take this," Kelly said, handing him the metal card.
"The rest of you get strapped in. We've lost a lot of time."
Up close, the damage to Kelly's armor was even more apparent. He had to have severe injuries to his chest, and not all the liquid coming out of the suit was hydraulic fluid. There was definitely blood as well.
"Let me help you," Holden said, reaching for him.
"Don't touch me," Kelly said, with an anger that took Holden by surprise. "You get strapped in and you shut the fuck up, now."
Holden didn't argue. He unhooked the tethers from his suit and helped Naomi maneuver Amos to the crash couches and strap him in. Kelly stayed on the deck above, but his voice came over the ship's comm.
"Mr. Kamal, are we ready to fly?" he said.
"Roger that, LT. The reactor was already hot when we got here. The Tachi was the ready standby, that's why we're taking her. Now go. As soon as we clear the hangar, full throttle."
"Roger," Alex said.
Gravity returned in tiny bursts at random directions as Alex lifted the ship off the deck and spun it toward the hangar door. Holden finished putting on his straps and checked to see that Naomi and Amos were squared away. The mechanic was moaning and holding on to the edge of the couch with a death grip.
"You're still with us, Amos," Holden said.
"Fan-fucking-tastic, Cap."
"Oh, shit, I can see Gomez," Alex said over the comm.
"He's down."
"Oh, you goddamn bastards. They're shooting him while he's down, son of a bitch."
The ship stopped moving, and Alex said in a quiet voice,
"Suck on this, asshole."
The ship vibrated for half a second, then paused before continuing toward the dock.
"Point defense cannons?" Holden asked.
"Summary roadside justice,"
Alex grunted back. Holden was imagining what several hundred rounds of Teflon-coated tungsten steel going 5,000 meters per second would do to human bodies when Alex threw down the throttle and a roomful of elephants swan-dived onto his chest. Holden woke in zero-G. His eye sockets and testicles ached, so they'd been at high thrust for a while. The wall terminal next to him said it had been almost half an hour. Naomi was moving in her couch, but Amos was unconscious, and blood was coming out of a hole in his suit at an alarming rate.
"Naomi, check Amos," Holden croaked, his throat aching with the effort.
"Alex, report."
"The Donnie went up behind us, Cap. Guess the Marines didn't hold. She's gone,"
Alex said in a subdued voice.
"The six attacking ships?"
"I haven't seen any sign of them since the explosion. I guess they're toast."
Holden nodded to himself. Summary roadside justice indeed. Boarding a ship was one of the riskiest maneuvers in naval combat. It was basically a race between the boarders rushing to the engine room and the collective will of those who had their fingers on the self-destruct button. After even one look at Captain Yao, Holden could have told them who'd lose that race. Still, someone had thought it was worth the risk. Holden pulled his straps off and floated over to Amos. Naomi had opened an emergency kit and was cutting the mechanic's suit off with a pair of heavy scissors. The hole had been punched out by a jagged end of Amos's broken tibia when the suit had pushed against it at 12G. When she'd finished cutting the suit away, Naomi blanched at the mass of blood and gore that Amos's lower leg had turned into.
"What do we do?" Holden asked.
Naomi just stared at him, then barked out a harsh laugh.
"I have no idea," she said.
"But you..." Holden started. She talked right over him.
"If he were made of metal, I'd just hammer him straight and then weld everything into place," she said.
"But he isn't made out of ship parts," she continued, her voice rising into a yell.
"So why are you asking me what to do?"
Holden held up his hands in a placating gesture.
"Okay, got it. Let's just stop the bleeding for now, all right? If Alex gets killed, are you going to ask me to fly the ship too?"
Holden started to answer and then stopped. She was right. Whenever he didn't know what to do, he handed off to Naomi. He'd been doing it for years. She was smart, capable, usually unflappable. She'd become a crutch, and she'd been through all the same trauma he had. If he didn't start paying attention, he'd break her, and he needed not to do that.
"You're right. I'll take care of Amos," he said. "You go up and check on Kelly. I'll be there in a few minutes."
Naomi stared at him until her breathing slowed, then said, "Okay," and headed to the crew ladder. Holden sprayed Amos's leg with coagulant booster and wrapped it in gauze from the first aid kit. Then he called up the ship's database on the wall terminal and did a search on compound fractures. He was reading it with growing dismay when Naomi called.
"Kelly's dead," she said, her voice flat.
Holden's stomach dropped, and he gave himself three breaths to get the panic out of his voice.
"Okay, I'll need your help setting this bone. Come on back down. Alex, give me half a G of thrust while we work on Amos."
"Any particular direction, Cap?"
Alex asked. I don't care, just give me half a G and stay off the radio till I say so.
Naomi dropped back down the ladder well as the gravity started to come up.
It looks like every rib on the left side of Kelly's body was broken, she said. Thrust G probably punctured all his organs.
He had to know that was going to happen, Holden said.
Yeah.
It was easy to make fun of the Marines when they weren't listening. In Holden's Navy days, making fun of jarheads was as natural as cussing. But four Marines had died getting him off the Doniger, and three of them had made a conscious decision to do so. Holden promised himself that he'd never make fun of them again.
We need to pull the bone straight before we set it. Hold him still and I'll pull on his foot. Let me know when the bone is retracted and lined up again.
Naomi started to protest. I know you're not a doctor, just best guess, Holden said. It was one of the most horrible things Holden had ever done. Amos woke up screaming during the procedure. He had to pull the leg out twice, because the first time the bones didn't line up, and when he let go, the jagged end of the tibia popped back out the hole in a spray of blood. Fortunately, Amos passed out after that, and they were able to make the second attempt without the screaming. It seemed to work. Holden sprayed the wound down with antiseptics and coagulants. He stapled the hole closed and slapped a growth-stimulating bandage over it, then finished up with a quick-form air cast and an antibiotic patch on the mechanic's thigh. Afterward, he collapsed onto the deck and gave in to the shakes. Naomi climbed into her couch and sobbed. It was the first time Holden had ever seen her cry. Holden, Alex, and Naomi floated in a loose triangle around the crash couch where Lieutenant Kelly's body lay. Below, Amos was in a heavily sedated sleep. The Tachi drifted through space toward no particular destination. For the first time in a long time, no one followed. Holden knew the other two were waiting for him, waiting to hear how he was going to save them. They looked at him expectantly. He tried to appear calm and thoughtful. Inside, he panicked. He had no idea where to go, no idea what to do. Ever since they'd found the scapulae, everywhere that should have been safe had turned into a death trap. The Canterbury, the Doniger. Holden was terrified of going anywhere for fear that it would be blown up moments later. Do something, a mentor of a decade earlier said to his young officers. It doesn't have to be right, it just has to be something. Someone is going to investigate what happened to the Doniger, Holden said. Martian ships are speeding to that spot as we speak. They'll already know the Tachi got away, because our transponder is blabbing our survival to the solar system at large.
No, it ain't, Alex said.
Explain that, Mr. Kamal.
This is a torpedo bomber. You think they want a nice transponder signal to lock onto when they're making runs on an enemy capital ship? No, there's a handy switch up in the cockpit that says transponder off. I flipped it before we flew out. We're just another moving object out of a million like us.
Holden was silent for two long breaths. Alex, that may be the single greatest thing anyone has ever done in the history of the universe, he said.
But we can't land, Jim, Naomi said. One, no port is going to let a ship with no transponder signal anywhere near them, and two, as soon as they make us out visually, the fact that we're a Martian warship will be hard to hide.
Yep, that's the downside, Alex agreed.
Fred Johnson, Holden said, gave us the network address to get in touch with him. I'm thinking that the OPA might be the one group that would let us land our stolen Martian warship somewhere.
It ain't stolen, Alex said. It's legitimate salvage now.
Yeah, you make that argument to the MCRN if they catch us. But let's try and make sure they don't.
So, we just wait here till Colonel Johnson gets back to us?
Alex asked.
No, I wait. You two prep Lieutenant Kelly for burial. Alex, you are MCRN, you know the traditions. Do it with full honors and record it in the log. He died to get us off that ship, and we're going to accord him every respect.
As soon as we land anywhere, we'll bounce the full record to MCRN command so they can do it officially.
Alex nodded.
We'll do it right, sir.
Fred Johnson replied to his message so fast that Holden wondered if he'd been sitting at his terminal waiting for it. Johnson's message consisted only of coordinates and the word tight beam. Holden aimed the laser array at the specified location. It was the same one Fred had beamed his first message from, then turned on his mic and said, "Fred?" The coordinates given were more than 11 light minutes away. Holden prepared to wait 22 minutes for his answer. Just to have something to do, he fed the location up to the cockpit and told Alex to fly in that direction at 1G as soon as they'd finished with Lieutenant Kelly. 20 minutes later, the thrust came up and Naomi climbed the ladder. She'd stripped off her vacuum suit and was wearing a red Martian jumpsuit that was half a foot too short for her and three times too big around. Her hair and face looked clean. "The ship has a head with a shower. Can we keep it?" she said.
"How'd it go?"